time to really concentrate on playwriting. So I gave up music totally for 4 years or something like that, and just wrote nonstop and put on everything, directed and produced everything that I did. So I got this great apprenticeship in playwriting.
Where did you produce it?
Oh, just in small theaters around New York. Yeah. There's a vibrant kind of off Broadway scene.
Is that the Liverpool Fantasy?
Yeah, Liverpool Fantasy actually was more off Broadway. That's had a lot of productions. It was about the Beatles if they hadn't made it. And that did really well. And I turned it into a novel that's out there still. But then around 89.
You were listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. On the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, this rally is in support and solidarity with all people who have considered, are considering, or have received abortions. It is a protest of the Rally to the Oregon Right to Life March and will celebrate our victories in imagining a future where every person has access to the reproductive health care they want and deserve. Again, that's the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the southwest corner at Morrison and Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The World Arts Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., entitled We've Come This Far, Keep Alive the Dreams. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choirs, the Jefferson Dancers, and of course, our own Victory Village Marketplace. Again, keep alive the dream. Monday, January 21st from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason, presented by the World Arts Foundation and broadcast live by KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. On the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, this rally is in support and solidarity with all people who have considered, are considering, or have received abortions. It is a protest of the Rally to the Oregon Right to Life March and will celebrate our victories in imagining a future where every person has access to the reproductive health care they want and deserve. Again, that's the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the southwest corner at Morrison and Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7. in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Mike.
Right to Survive radio show here on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. I'm sorry, but I'm just so excited. We got a good, excellent show today, and we're going to be talking about the Compassionist Change District Portland. But first, I would like for our guests and co-hosts to introduce themselves.
I'm your co-host tonight. I'm Lisa Fay.
I'm a guest. I'm Fran Michelle.
I'm also a guest. I'm Benjamin Donlin.
Yeah. And so you all been working with numerous organizations, especially Right to Survive. And everyone know that this show, Right to Survive Radio, is dedicated to the houseless community. And I know lately we've been showing the other side of that, that people that's in house, that was formerly housed, are coming back out and helping the people that's still on the street. And so I want to read a flyer on what you are putting out and saying to the public so they'll know what this Compassionist Change District Portland is all about. It says here, we all get it. Houselessness is a crisis in Portland. Sleeping on the streets, threatening our houseless neighbors' safety, health, and their ability to work to get an education. For businesses, the housing emergency creates tension over trash, waste, sidewalk obstructions, and much, much more. There are many solutions. Not all are created equally. A deeply flawed fix is heading to the Portland Central City Council vote on January 17th, which has been changed to January 30th. The Central East Side Industrial Council would ask permission to create an ESD, that stands for Enhanced Service Districts, to run private security, patrol, and street cleanings. Sounds good, right? Wrong. The Enhanced Service District, ESD, is expensive, forces renter and consumers to pay fees passed on by the businesses and landlord. Under chromatic governs public space with no public oversight or accountability, cruel and dangerous private security and cleaning forces strip our neighbors experience houselessness of items they need to survive. Infective ESD in Portland and other places have not specifically reduced trash or crime from 2015 to 2018 in our downtown area collective. Twice the trash and four times many needles. ESD do not fix the root cause of houselessness. There is a better way. A Rye Community Coalition led by Right to Survive asked the Central East Side Industrial Council to adopt an innovative Compassionate Change District model that tackles and share root problems of all neighborhoods, housed and unhoused. The CCD stands for Community Compassionate Change District, includes a cleanup program to help solve the issues that come from unequal access of water, sewage, and garbage service. It includes a safety program that centers to the right of safe sleep and safe parking and is trauma-informed. It includes a job development program using peer-run system to support the functioning of hygiene and safety components and will be a transparency run by a democratic governing board that includes representatives from all stakeholders with annual independent audits and all at a fraction of the cost of the proposed ESD. Sign our petition at ccdpdx.org and attend this key meeting on January 30th, City Hall. Thank you much. Now to our guests. Explain to me what you all have been doing, the hassle you've been going through, and why you're involved in this.
Well, we might want to talk first about this the terrible proposal that's come from the Central East Side Industrial Council Security Committee, which apparently has been working on this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I live in the neighborhood and only found out about it just recently. I did go to one meeting that they had last month, but they didn't want to hear from anybody who wasn't on their committee. So they were not particularly receptive to having dialogue around
this.
Who's
on that committee? Is it just business people?
It's just business people. It's mostly property development, some bankers, and a bunch of other business folks. The Central East Side Industrial Council is a business organization, a business and property owner organization. So their mission is to, as they say, protect the rights of business and property owners. So this is the group that, like the groups working that developed ESDs, mm-hmm. business improvement districts downtown and in the Lloyd area, wants to take over a lot of the services that should be public services, trash collection and so on, things that are part of public life.
So they're just trying to privatize
public
life.
But they want to privatize it.
Okay. And it's the business people dictating what the homeowners, the houseless people, and anybody else that live in that neighborhood, what to do. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. They're not particularly receptive to hearing from people who are not part of their affluent property owning cohort.
Okay.
And when I was at that meeting, somebody asked how many people here on this committee live in the area, and maybe two of them raised their hands.
They said,
well, there's 300 property owners that we've contacted. So, I mean,
how are we supposed to know that?
It's a big area, right? Yeah. I mean, I assume that a lot of these are absentee landlords. They're people who are not necessarily directly affected by what's going on in the neighborhood in an immediate way, but they are going to benefit if the property values go up, which I think is part of their plan.
So if you have any questions, call us at 503-231-8187. This is KBOO FM. KBOO.
Hello there, I'm your new neighbor.
We just heard that little clip of music, We Are Neighbors, and it really hit home when you said that they've been discussing and pushing for this to come to the point where it will meet council vote on the 30th of this month. For 2 years. 2 years. And the residents in the neighborhood, the businesses that rent storefront property in the neighborhood, people that are employed in the neighborhood, even KBOO here, we spoke with people that had little to no awareness that this was happening. That's shocking. That's really scary to know that a small number of appointed people, and we're not clear how they're appointed, has control, a potential control over a neighborhood that is huge, well, a district that's huge. I mean, we're talking the 84 all the way down to Powell in southeast, and then from southeast 12th down to River. That's a substantial area.
Well, and when I asked about, like, why didn't I hear about this? Mm-hmm. They said, well, as it turns out, I live just outside the boundary, mm-hmm. as though the effects of this project will stop at 12th Street, which I'm not sure this is quite the case. Mm-hmm. And they say that they contacted property owners in the area, but who knows? Okay. They apparently didn't contact KBOO.
Right. And so as KBOO, we can't speak for KBOO right now. We don't want to get them involved in something that Right Survive can do and don't care. However, a representative had to speak for Cable himself. But by you, what I'm asking, they don't mind mentioning Cable because they don't know, just like you don't know. How did that make you feel that this thing is going on to privatize your public neighborhood?
Well, it makes me feel alarmed, among other things. I, especially given the nature of the plan that they're proposing. I mean, ideally, in a democracy, we have, as citizens and as residents, some say in what happens in governing our city. And things should be done in an open and transparent and above board democratic kind of way. And this does not seem to be happening that way. And the nature of what's happening is also alarming. A lot of what they want to do is hire private security rent-a-cops.
And that's the question I want to ask. I've read that. And who will this... And what is North... East and Force.
Northwest
Force, yeah. And who are they?
So the Northwest Enforcement is a group, a private security group that has been in this Central East Side neighborhood for quite a while. They have a relatively good reputation within the business community.
And not with the public, but the private sector.
Right, with the private sector for taking care of all those little problems that
gangs in New York all over again.
And so they've actually been allotted somewhere like $1.4
million. $1.4
million. The exact number isn't very obvious, but 48% of their $2.6 million budget goes towards security and safety and sidewalk operations, as they call it. So it's what that exact number is it's difficult to say, but around the 1.4 million ballpark.
And what do they say sidewalk operations entails?
Okay, want to go to the caller?
Sure.
Okay. Caller, state your name and your business.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm a KBOO supporter and listener. I just want to know from you guys which organizations that are actively working to address homelessness or the houseless challenges. Which organizations are doing good work right now that you think should be expanded or replicated?
One, I can say right now, then we can go to, I guess, is our group, Right to Survive, Sister La Rose, Street Roots, and...
Yeah, I think there's a, especially in Portland, there's a multitude of organizations. As someone who's been houseless in multiple states, Portland has a lot going on in the houseless community. I mean, there's things like Hazelnut Grove, which is doing amazing work. There's Right to Dream 2, Dignity Village, yeah. And then service oriented. There's like Join. There's NAMI. There's a big variety of groups doing multiple kinds of work. PPOP is another P-pop. Great
yep,
group.
And Job of Justice support us wholeheartedly also.
Rahab Sisters is Rahab doing good work.
Sister. Oh, you must have got cut off.
Oh.
Are you still there, caller?
Hey, looks like you have another caller.
Okay, we go on to another caller. Call us at 503-231-8187. Okay, caller, state your name and your business.
This is Paul Bowden, and I'm not sure what my business is.
Okay. What
my
you want to...
This is Revolution.
Revolution, evolution. You better believe it.
So, Paul, what do you think about this CEIC?
I think it's a business improvement district, no matter what local names they give to themselves. I know from the years of research we've done on these entities that it is Reaganomics. It is a private takeover of public spaces based on the theory and the concept that government is the problem. Government can do nothing right. We need trickle-down economics, and if we do things and we invest money and we direct public resources to gentrify and build the property values and the profits of private property owners, business owners, corporate America, that that will trickle down and benefit all of us. It's a failed policy, it's a failed economic system, and it's unfortunately becoming easier and easier for business groups to create these mechanisms because local governments are actively supporting them, putting money into them, paying property tax assessment fees and other fees for having public space. Our space, we are the public. Our space is in artificially created districts that these guys pulled together, and we're now paying them, and they're using that money to hire security guards to chase us out of our communities.
Exactly. Do you all have something like that in San Francisco or the community you live in?
They're all over the country. Okay. We have 40 of them in San Francisco.
Oh, my goodness.
They're all over the country. New York City, Manhattan alone, a tiny little island like Manhattan, has 72 business improvement districts.
Oh, my. Do any people live there, or is it just a big business state or city?
They're all staying in Trump hotels.
They're staying in Trump hotels.
That's why I bring it back to, like, people, this didn't just happen. You know, like, there was a plan afoot. They called it the Reagan Revolution. It was bringing neoliberal theory and economic policy to America after we had tested it in South America and Central America through the United Fruit Company, that the role of government is to support the profits of business, and business will take care of the rest of us.
And it's becoming
increasing. We see HUD getting wiped out, and we see tax assessments that otherwise could be building housing going to private enterprises to take over public spaces. And Clean and Safe controls 213 blocks in Old Town, downtown Portland, Oregon.
And that counter proposal that I read over when we first started, what do you think about that? I mean,
I think that having a counter proposal when you're opposing something that is being proposed and saying here's something else you could do instead, is a really valid exercise, and it also I think enhances your organizing to, you know, you gotta fight. I mean, that's just the reality.
Yeah.
This stuff ain't going to change without a fight. And from Malcolm X to 100 right. other people, like, that's clearly the case. But while you're fighting, you also want to, you know, energize your creative side. So we're going to fight like hell against this, but what do we want?
Exactly.
And that's how I see the counter proposal.
All right, thank you. We're going to a music break, and we got another caller. We'll talk to that caller after the music break and continue to hear our guests talk and call in and ask our guest questions. Thank you, Paul Bowden.
Thanks,
for
Paul.
Calling
yeah, thanks
in
for
on.
Having me on.
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay, music break.
Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. We have another caller on the line. Hello, caller.
State your name and your business.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, hi. Yeah, I wanted to make a comment about the last caller about the whole areas and stuff like that. I don't think it's such a bad thing about bringing up property values and stuff like that, because in the long run, it's going to help out a lot of different people. I mean, I don't like the whole idea about increasing the values, kind of like what happened in the Lentz area or the Foster area, because you increase the value so much where you blow out a lot of people into different areas that really can't afford things.
but I do see a value in bringing up value to areas and bringing in new businesses and stuff like that.
So which people are we talking about that would help? Are we talking about most people or just a few people that exclusively are benefiting from this?
Well, I'm talking about bringing in new restaurants, new customers, stuff like that for the existing businesses that are there.
But are you doing it at the expense of hurting other people who came with the affordability and livability clause? That's what we're talking about. There's nothing wrong for improving your life, but at what expense? And if these new businesses come in, will they hire people? Who would they hire? Would they hire the houseless people, give them an opportunity to get employment, give them an opportunity to help in that area, to make that area, like you said, property values go up? But you wouldn't make more people houseless to put one restaurant that may go out of business in 2 years.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's also the case that, increasing property values also goes by the name gentrification, which we've seen a lot of in Portland. And, a lot of the development in Portland, my personal opinion about the aesthetics of it is that it's kind of bland and boring, and bringing in upscale housing businesses, big restaurants, and so on is not necessarily in the interests of most people, and not even necessarily in the aesthetic interests of the city as a whole. It makes it more bland, it makes it less interesting, and it increases inequality. There's certainly some evidence that business improvement districts, which the Western Regional Advocacy Project has described as homeless exclusion districts, actually are counterproductive to in terms of solving the very problems that they purport to want to solve. The Central East Side Industrial Council they've taken on a lot of the language about helping the homeless and doing good things and making the area livable, but the supposed solutions that they're proposing are actually, I think, likely to do the opposite of what they're saying it will do.
No, they saying what we want them to, what they want to say. They happen to homeless out that neighborhood. They didn't finish. They must have sneezed on it or something.
So, to talk a little bit about the Compassionate Change District, I know countless hours have been put into this counter proposal. Could you talk a little bit about what some of the human alternatives are and why this is a much more humane, needed approach?
Sure, yeah. So there's four main components to the counter proposal, and these are all things that have been developed by the houseless community in parts. None of it's really been all put together as a comprehensive proposal, as far as I know, until this. But what's important, though, is that these are ideas that came from the houseless community that were generated and propagated and made successful by the houseless community. Who knows best than those who do it, right? So a big part of it is a cleanup program, so like a peer-run cleanup program. A lot of this would deal around, this could even be job development as well, but Metro that had mentioned that they want to help put a little money into this over time, and given the amount of trash that is supposedly reported upon, it's important that we keep a clean city, but who does that trash, right? Who cleans it up, rather? This could be, a pilot program overseen by the houseless community itself, helping distribute trash cans and then also pickup services. There's a lot of different varieties of how that could go down, but ideally, peer run is the key.
So how is this ESD, Enhanced Service District, being funded to do this?
So the way that's a very complicated question, but the way they're approaching trash pickups is to go through Central City, which is doing a Clean Start program, which is they're putting quite a bit of money into it. It's hard to say at this point, I think, how much money they'll be contracting through Central City, but they'd be doing that. So the way they're funded, though, as a whole, the Central East Side is a little complicated. So they're taking money from parking permits. They're taking money from parking meters. They're taking money from additionally, they're trying to get money from property management assessments of property, right? So, you know, that'd be a percentage every year that every property owner would pay as a part of a tax into a pool that goes into the city's budget and then is reallocated, redistributed right back into their pockets.
So you said, and this is something that stuck out in my head, you said they taking money from parking meters and stuff. So
yeah.
Poor people and houseless people do use those meters. I use the meter sometimes. I'm poor. I'm not rich. And so, and then even with car camping, or some people who can car camp, when they go park their car to stay away from people, they use parking meters so they won't be harassed. So they taking money from poor people that use the parking meters and harassing the people with the money they're getting from the poor people. They harassing the poor people they're getting from the poor people. I mean, this needs to be a reality check, really. What they trying to say, that poor people are sadists or masochists or something? Hey, pay me, bite me, pinch me, scratch me, make me write bad checks, sweep me out the neighborhood, take my car, put it in tow, give me torture.
And another thing you said, too, was they pay the assessment tax to the city, and then the city gives it back. They don't give it back to the homeowner or the business that's renting space. They give it to these
ESDs or business service, improvement
right,
districts.
Enhancement or, districts yeah. or bids, correct?
Yeah. I think it's more like the county collects it, and then they give it to the city, and then the city, through the tax bureau or whatever, they then reallocate it to the ESD. But, yeah.
Which, again, is run by property developers and bankers right. and
yeah, the president major business is owners. The owner of the Beam Development Corporation.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that orange man.
but, yeah, they set up a special taxing district called a parking meter district on that area that was vouched for by PBOT and the Portland Development Commission to receive 51% of all parking meters.
Whoa.
And then they recently were fighting, the Central East Side was fighting against PBOT on the Greenway expansion to ensure more parking meters were there and not more biking lanes. They don't want biking to happen if it comes at the expense of their budget.
Well, yeah, you can't put a parking meter there for a bicycle.
Right, that's and, right.
You don't know. You may have to pay to park a bike or something. Should they get
someday.
Money?
Yeah. And so for me, even more heinously, is that in this area in Central East Side where KBOO is and many other businesses, workers would have to pay for parking permits, right? And so if this was a small fee, that'd be great. That'd be fine, I guess. But we're talking about the highest parking permit in the entire country. And so we're currently at $300 in this area. Oakland is the next highest at $75.
Wait, $300 if you get a parking violation?
No.
To get a parking permit.
To get a parking permit. Park in this neighborhood.
So in one of their Transportation Management Association committee meetings, they were talking about raising it to $600. So they're proposing in the future to double the rate that is already currently the highest in the country.
So I know businesses in that area, in that district, have their own private parking lot. So I bet you they're not paying for no parking permit.
And those that don't, their employees are going to have to get these permits to park on the street so they can go to work. Yeah. And if you divide that up, how much of their income is going to pay for parking?
Do the math. We would be back. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number for this radio show, Right to Survive Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. So now we go into another music break. Get your thoughts together, Ibrahim. This is fascinating.
Okay, maybe we're not going to amuse. There we go. Get out.
Now get out.
KBOO 90.7 FM. You're listening to Right to Survive Radio tonight, and we are talking about compassionate change districts, and that is a counter proposal to the ESD, Enhanced Service District, that is being brought before City Council on January 30th. If it comes to vote yes, then we will have another bid district, Business Improvement District, on the southeast side of Portland.
And what, I think it's interesting that among the groups that are supporting this alternative plan for the Compassionate Change District, CCDPDX.org, if you'd like to go and sign on and be a supporter.
But can among you give that website one more time?
CCDPDX.org.
Thank you.
And they have a very handy form, so you can contact all of your city councilors. And among the groups that have already said, you know, we support this compassionate change district are groups like Portland Tenants United, because, right, I mean, in addition to Right to Survive and many of the groups that are obviously working with houseless people, but tenants care about this because, right, you know, there is often a fine line between being a tenant and not being housed. And
exactly.
They've been working on maintaining their tenancy. So that's a major interest. Another group that signed on that I think it's interesting to note is 350 PDX, because housing is really also a climate change issue, right? More and more people are, I mean, all of the people who lost their homes in fires in California are just like, that's the first wave. There's going to be more of this coming. And the fact that they, instead of bike lanes, we're getting parking meters is something that's going to be adding to the problem of climate change. So I think it's clear that, you know, these groups like 350 PDX and Portland Tenants United are signing on because this is an issue that affects everybody in lots of ways. And it shouldn't be something that's decided only by business and property owners and the most affluent people who don't necessarily even live or spend much time in this area. So
Fran, you said something about natural disaster like fires or flood, and people run to the rescue of people whose house been devoured by fires or floods and stuff. So that's natural disaster. We know people have that. What about government disaster by creating houselessness and creating poverty? Nobody rushed to help those people that's living in the street, and that's what we're seeing now.
Or gentrification.
That's government. I think that's absolutely
true. Business and government.
Yeah. Right. Systemic.
Yeah. Well, systemic, I mean, issues. I think floods and fires are also added to by policies that governments have pursued and the interests of the fossil fuel industry that has created situations where we've got drought. And so we have, you know, enormous fires and people can't breathe for months at a time in Portland. Right. So, I mean, I don't think that that natural disasters are any more as entirely natural as they once may have been. But it's true. Yes. Yeah. People think that people are more ready. I guess a lot of people are more ready to help those victims
of natural disaster instead of victim of the government with property and business improvement district and gentrification.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back a little bit because we had mentioned how the Central East Side Industrial Council's proposal is not going to help the core issue of homelessness.
Right.
It's not addressing systemic issues. But I even want to argue that these business improvement districts or enhanced service districts are part of the systemic problem of creating homelessness. You know, I think they are one of the core reasons why homelessness exists. I mean, they've had, you know, around our country, around 40 to 50 years in every major downtown sector, wielding control, lobbying, and having influence over how homelessness is seen, viewed, and dealt with, right? Amongst the fact that they're usually made up of developers and local and, you know, international businesses. And so I would almost argue that they are the core problem of creation of homelessness. And so to see another one expand here in Portland or to be created here in Portland, this very progressive city is shocking and appalling to me. And I just I just wanted to say that.
And I can agree with you, because when we had Right to Dream 2 on the corner of 4th and Northwest Burnside, my good friend Michael Wright, who owned that property, educated me on how that, you know, he was telling me about really the broken windows theory on how they flood downtown area with a lot of undesirables and stuff, and then that property value went down, and then the developers and the business that should come in and promote that and fix it up, and the property value go, you know, rise up again. So that right there within itself is what you they're what you're talking about, how they create negativity in certain areas. And for the record, right now there's only one Chinese restaurant in Chinatown due to that.
Yeah,
I mean it creates the problem that it's trying to solve, both by increasing property values and increasing this gentrification problem that drives up rent so that people can't afford to live in apartments anymore and end up homeless, and that is the chief driver of houselessness in Portland, as it is around the country. And then they come up with this supposed solution that further traumatizes people. It adds to the problems of people who are living on the streets with, you know, doing sweeps and taking away their stuff and calling it trash and calling that cleaning up the streets. At the security meeting that I went to, they were boasting about how much trash they'd collected and about giving out blankets. And one of the houseless people who had come to the meeting said, well, yeah, you know, you give away blankets and then you come and you collect all my stuff and you take away the blanket again. So that's a sort of false cycle there. It also makes it more difficult for people to maintain their lives. What we need is more housing, that's affordable for people, and we have plenty of housing, right? We've got 16,000 empty units sitting around in Portland, mm-hmm. Which is plenty to house everybody. It's just that they're priced so high that people can't afford to rent them. It drives up prices, drives people into homelessness, and then this sort of pattern of sweeps makes everybody's life more difficult. So it's harder for people to maintain jobs, which is something that, like, you would never guess from looking at the CEIC website about this, that actually lots of people who don't have housing do have jobs, right? They just don't have jobs that pay them enough to afford a place to live. And so, you know, it makes everything in life more difficult for people who are living on the street, and makes it more likely that more people will be living on the street. So it is. I agree, Ben, that this is it's creating the very problem that it's purporting to solve.
Yeah. So 503-231-8187 is the call-in number, and we're going to take another music break.
It's my house, and I live here. There's a welcome at the door, and if you come on in, you're gonna get much more. There's my chair, I put it there. Everything you see is with love and care. It's my house, and I live here. I wanna tell you.
Okay, we're back to Right to Survive on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial, and we're talking about the Compassionate Change District.
Right. So I got distracted earlier. I get lost in my own talking. So there's four main components to the Compassionate Change District, one of which is the peer-run waste and hygiene program. And so that includes a variety of different things about, you know, helping bring access to water and sewage and the garbage services, ideally that are peer run. And that can look a variety of different ways, whether it's porta potties or an outdoor installation of showers. Additionally, though, safety is a big priority in the streets. When we talk about livability, we're very rarely talking about the livability of those who are actually on the streets. We're instead talking about housed people's interactions with people on the streets and how unsafe they feel, right? So it's typically a term of prejudice when you say livability. It's coded language so that you don't have to talk about your own hobophobia, right? So when we talk about safety for those on the streets, though, there's a variety of different models that have been created, things like Right to Dream 2, things like Dignity Village, and more importantly, models that were created in Seattle, too. So Sarah Rankin, an amazing researcher and lawyer at the University of Seattle, developed this great paper on safe encampment sites that have been going on there, which we can use as a model to replicating them across the city, because as you know, Seattle has like...
Eight.
That's always, that's been doing well received by the communities, has been, you know, for those who wonder, it's been raising real estate values, but more importantly, it's ethical, right, and they're peer run. So bringing that model to Portland, I think, is extremely important for safe encampment sites. Also importantly is safe parking sites for cars, for people who live out of cars, which is a great number of people in our city.
I was going to intervene with something and then I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry.
Okay, well, while you collect your thoughts, I just want to touch base on the peer ran supported communities. Many people are able to re-enter stable housing and retain it, having gone through a peer-led support program like Right to Dream 2, Dignity Village, the 8 models up in Seattle. There's also neighborhood reduction in crime and human trauma, and neighborhoods report less trash on the streets because all neighbors have a sense of community, a sense of belonging, and are taking more responsibility, not to police our neighbors, but to enhance our neighbors and bring each other up and support one another. Another thing I wanted to touch base on is when you're talking about peer-ran waste and hygiene, and you're talking a lot about trash, but the hygiene, the idea of hygiene, showers, porta potties, mobile laundries, I think it was San Diego who had a huge hepatitis outbreak, and once they brought in portable showers, portable laundry, more access to porta potties, they wiped out their hepatitis outbreak. We don't have a hepatitis outbreak here that we know of yet.
Actually, according to the papers, we do have a hepatitis A outbreak going on in the houseless community in Oregon.
Okay. Another reason more strongly to advocate for mobile showers, mobile laundry.
Sometimes when you have like 4 bathrooms that are open.
Yeah. But that's not, is it 24 hours or for a period of time? I don't know. We were talking with one friend of ours who said, "Yeah, we have public bathroom, but it's
7
open
in the whole city."
Yeah, 7, but they open from certain period of time. So what they trying to tell houseless people, you got to contain yourself and control when you had to go.
It's part of a model that criminalizes houseless people doing things that everybody has to do, and that nobody notices when housed people do, because they're doing it in private.
Right. Farewell, then. You're supposed to do it in private. Oh, look, if you do it in public, it's an indecent exposure, and you had to register as a sex offender. So you had to, you know, go in private. So they need things where people can go behind doors, or, you know, build a curtain behind a tree, somewhere to go where they can be in privacy. Okay, Ben, you have more to say.
In thinking about camps, I don't think we've noted yet that the CEIC, which is proposing this enhanced services business improvement homeless exclusion district, is the same is one of the groups that sued former Mayor Hales a couple of years ago over his safe sleep policy that would allow camping. Right. So the very same people who say that they want to help the homeless are also the same people who said, no, you can't camp in public on public land.
And there was the same people that turned away Right to Dream too for being in that area. That's also.
Right. Brad.
Brad Sad Brad Molson.
Brad Molson and his development team. Yes.
So.
Okay, call. We have a caller on the line. We're going to go to our caller. Okay, caller, state your name and your business.
Hi, my name's Ann. I'm a supporter of Right to Survive.
Hey, Ann. Hey, thank Ann. You. Hey. How are you doing?
Great. I just wanted to say thank you for this important show, and I'm glad that you're not only just speaking out against the what's going on the East Side, but came up with a good alternative. The thing that comes to mind is that that isn't mentioned is there's a lot of talk about, oh, we need to clean up after these homeless people and this kind of stuff, and they make a mess. And for me, understanding that that these businesses polluted our city, and
yes,
they don't have to take responsibility for that, and yet they try to blame poor people for putting a trash. It just doesn't even make any sense to me, because they have, you know, you all know about the harbor.
The harbor of hope. Yes, we do.
Superfund site.
Oh,
and
yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah.
And so that's one environmental thing. And the other thing I wanted to say is that when they get these industrial districts, they get huge tax breaks. And that, you know, they declare it blighted and they get a huge tax break. Then they say they're going to build affordable housing, and they always, you know, they always go back on that deal and say, oh, they don't put enough affordable housing units in it. So, I mean, I just think it's important to continue to look at the big picture about who is really taking advantage of the system, who is getting government handouts, who is not paying their taxes, so we don't have any social services. Anyways, that's what I think of.
And then someone, I forget the name of that big industrial that's by the lift that go to OHSP. What's that community?
OHSU?
No, that community.
Zytel Waterfront.
That one. And that was the same way these developers and these business people was going to make it half and half for affordable, attainable housing and for people.
Right.
And they left that idea. They blew that idea away. And so this, I think that's a way to get a hand in and throw in and say, oh, we're going to help the poor. And then, you know, which poor you helping? The rich, lower poor, whatever? I don't know.
Right.
With this service district, this bid, this business improvement zone, they want to hire private security, and part of their pitch is that the private security will have trauma-informed care and they'll have services. Now, when push comes to shove, they couldn't tell us how they were going to have this trauma-informed care, how they were going to be able to use it effectively in the community, or who these support services would be from or by, and how would there be any real access. Like, we know when sweep signs go up, it states on there that a social service agency will be called. But anyone who's been involved in a sweep knows that no agency ever comes out and talks to them before, during, or after a sweep.
So, so let's go back to our guests and see what they talk about that private security.
Thank you
for calling in.
It's a great point. Yeah, the ESD.
Yeah. Enhanced Service District
proposal. and they talk about referring people, and this is the supposed improvement district downtown as well. They say that they will refer people to services, right? So they're just going to refer people to services that they are not funding, that they are not helping, I mean, to build up. So if there aren't services, what does that do, right? So apparently they don't even make the referrals they say they're going to make, but they're not adding to the services that are needed. They're just referring.
Right. I mean, I could get a hold of 100 little street books, guides, and pass them out. Now, does that mean that I have done my job connecting people with services because I hand you a one-pager or a little booklet?
That would probably count.
So the whole thing of it is that they're not asking the community, they're trying to dictate to what we should do. They just taking it on their own. And that's one thing Right to Survive always say, People are not the problem. The problem is the problem. So you don't cast and overshadow people and say, hey, we're going to move you out of our neighborhood and the problem's going to go away. No. Other people going to come into that neighborhood. And that's why they're trying to get this private security. Now, this private security, and you say it's going to be a referral system. That's how they're going to do it. And with this private security, who would they be accountable to?
Well, they say there's a referral system, but as we've talked to local agencies in the area, we found out that there have been no referrals. And when questioned at previous security meetings, they were not ever able to actually detail who they're giving these referrals to or the job development program, but they say it very vaguely and generally, and they sound very self-assured. So, of course, they're doing it. It's just they don't have any details.
So how are they going to calculate the data, the matrix? How are they going to know if what they're doing is enhancing the neighborhood or just costing more money?
Because you won't see no more houseless people around. That's what I won't see no more trash. But that's a lie. It'll always be trash. We're a trashy country.
I mean, that's a good question. Yeah. How will they know their measure of success?
Right.
But I think given the history of business improvement districts in the country, their metrics of success generally are a result of how much money they make in the long term. So if property values go up, the property assessments go up, and so their budgets get bigger. And so as long as their budget gets bigger,
they're making money.
Then as long as they're making money.
So that's what they enhance in their money-making opportunities,
right.
Not helping people to get productive again.
Right.
They also, I've noticed that on the city website and the information about the clean and safe downtown and in their documents about this proposed district, they sort of tout as evidence of how it's working how much trash they've picked up, which again, you know, if you actually look at how much trash they've picked up, like there's more trash than there used to be
because there's more homeless people.
Because property values have gone up and they've raised prices on rent and nobody can afford to live there anymore except on the street.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break and then we'll come back, say a few closing words and wrap up the show.
503-231-8187 is the call-in number.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Right to Survive Radio, and we are talking tonight about business improvement districts, also known as enhanced service districts.
Homeless exclusion districts.
Homeless exclusion districts. And we're talking about as well, counter proposals similar to the one that many organizations worked on, including members of Right to Survive, called the Compassionate Change District. It's Compassionate Change District for Innovative Human and Democratic Alternatives. We're talking about democratic alternatives here in the last few minutes. And they say that they have a governing board. Now, the governing board is made up of 12 developers, and we really don't know much more.
Compassionate Change.
No.
Okay.
No, the enhanced service district. And we only have like 2 minutes left, so I want to make this real quick so you can answer. If we do the Compassionate Change District, we want a democratic governance. How would that governance look? Who would be the people that would make up this
It's very likely that it'd be those who live in the area on that are most highly affected by what we're doing. So it'd be the people on the streets, right? People that rent in the area, people that work in the area, people that are not necessarily just property owners, although one or two property owners may be good to have equal representation or representation. But it'd be a horizontal structure, I think, you know, and I think that those who are going through it need to be the ones heard the most, you know?
Nothing about us without us.
Yeah,
exactly, it's for exactly. us.
Exactly. Yes, we need more community involvement, not corporate policing.
Right. Yeah, not public takeover.
All right. We would like to thank our guest for being here tonight.
And if y'all want to say your name and let people know how the website to go to vote on this Compassionate Change District, please do.
My name is Fran Michelle. The website that you should go to contact city council members and let them know that you support compassionate change rather than business interests is ccdpdx.org.
My name is Benjamin. I'd like to thank Ibrahim and Lisa for this amazing opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is ccdpdx.org. And you do not have to live in this neighborhood. If you feel compassionate about it, anywhere in the city of Portland, please sign, go to the website, CCDPDX. And Right to Survive will be having a meeting tomorrow at Join off of 81st Avenue in Portland and out on the east side. It starts at 5, goes from 5 to 7. If you would like to talk more about this or have stories that you'd like to share, please come to our meeting again, 5 to 7 tomorrow night at Join. And our website is www.righttosurvive. That's the number 2, righttosurvive.org.
Thank you. I'll come back next month and listen to another show about houselessness in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you.
Remember, be kind.
Feed someone.
Mark of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon. Is a